How do you like being human?
Say what?
It's all right.
Better than being Altarian. Altarians are a filthy people. We could take over this place if we wanted. They have nothing here to stop us.
Yo, hippie! What kind of dude are you?
She met a guy like you. Now she's dead.
You should believe in ghosts, P-Brain.
He's a closet!
Don't hurt me, please!
Don't keep me waiting for those onions, Herman!
This is all the whiskey you possess?
Everyone out of the way of the bulldozer!
Hello and welcome to Hello, This is the Doom Show. I am Richard. Folks, I am in... Oh my god! My cat just attacked.
What was that?
That was my cat being a fucking pain in my butt. Not a literal pain in my butt, folks. I go to the doctor for that. Figurative pains in the butt, Gorgon the cat. We are obviously coughing up aliens because, Simon, you just coughed up something right out of your butt.
Yeah, we'll go with that. That provides convenient cover if I actually do start coughing and no one thinks it's anything else.
Folks, we are here to talk about The Hidden from 1987. And then just for funsies, real brief at the end, we're going to talk about The Hidden 2 from 1993 because it came with my DVD and I said, let's do this. Huge shout out to our buddy Mark. At one time, gave us a list of movies to cover, and I was more than happy to visit this, and I know you were excited about The Hidden. Why are you excited about The Hidden, Simon?
I mean, it is a film I enjoy. I hadn't seen it in quite a while, and plus, you know, as I like to do every single time I get a single chance on the show to do so, it allows me to make Twin Peaks references and Overdrive this time.
Yay! Yes, this was directed by Jack Sholder, and we know him from Nightmare on Elm Street 2, among other things. I have a feeling he was a little disappointed with how much money he made on that versus how much money that movie made. Versus how much money this movie made, because this wasn't a bomb, but for a $5 million movie to only make $10 million worldwide, that's not such a hot thing. But I think this made it up on home video, because, you know, this is 87, so hopefully video rentals. I would love to know, like, are video rentals counted somewhere?
Surely they must be. And
I need to research that.
I hope it made the money up. I mean, it's still, I forget where I first saw this. It still feels kind of obscure.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it has its fans, but you don't really hear enough people talk about it.
No, it's sad. But here, let me play a trailer for it here. I'm hoping to find a TV spot because the trailer I found is the whole movie.
Oh my God.
So I'm going to try to find something shorter. I'll do a shorter version of the trailer. So here is the trailer for The Hidden.
Wanted criminal in the universe.
It's not human.
Has come to Earth.
Step out of the car slowly.
Now nothing can stop it. Except the cop who followed it here.
Am I crazy or does this seem just a little bizarre?
You think it's over now?
The Hidden.
You're wrong.
Rated R. Now playing at a theater near you.
Let's see if I can find a nice VHS tape here for the Hidin. It's a freaking it's Hidin apostrophe. Do 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 do. I'm loving dudes. So here we go. Siskel and Ebert gives it 2 thumbs up. And Roger Ebert goes on to say, a cross between Invasion of the Body Snatchers and the Terminator. Sure.
Yeah, I guess that kind of works.
Sneak preview says it's wildly entertaining. Rex Reed says, keeps you on the edge of your seat. Never a dull moment for your ass to fall out. I added that last part. Here's the plot. Something hideous is changing law-abiding citizens into monstrous, hyper-violent psychopaths. Now only Kyle MacLachlan, Dune, Blue Velvet, and Michael Nuri, Flashdance, can halt the horrifying rampage of the Hidin, a series of bizarre, inexplicable robberies and murders have L.A. Police Detective Tom Beck Nuri totally baffled.
And it doesn't help when a mysterious FBI agent, Lloyd Gallagher MacLachlan,
tells me that a demonic creature creates the victims, dash, and transforms into human, oh god, I mean human killers, with unearthly fondness, heavy metal music, red Ferraris, and unspeakable violence. It's a spine-chilling, high-velocity sci-fi killer from the Netflix Black Color, crushingly uneasiness.
Fuck, that was too long. We're going to spoil this movie because, you know, we're going to talk about the whole thing. Are you ready to have some rockin' and rollin'?
Oh yeah.
You know what I'm curious about? This soundtrack, boy.
There was a sorry, go on.
No, please.
Yeah, when you mentioned Jack Shoulder, and I sort of was laughing yesterday when I was rewatching it, because it's in the last track. Is it the one on the credits? I guess these are in order. Yeah, there's like, I think 3 tracks by Concrete Blonde on there, and the last one is called Over Your Shoulder. And yeah, I want to make a little, yeah, like Jack Shoulder joke there, but no, I just didn't even try.
Over My Jack Shoulder? I like it.
Yeah, that'll do.
Yes, I like Concrete Blonde. What else is in here? Mm. I thought there'd be a metal band I recognized.
I listened to it all earlier, and there were a couple of metal sounding tracks. Who is that? They're called, not something I've heard of before, Shock Paris. Shock as in Hesse. Can't speak. Hesse?
Oh my God.
S? I thought I just made up a new letter there. What's wrong with me? I think it's the Hidin scrolled down my throat or something. It's oh god, exactly. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, shock. Thank so you. Yeah, Shock Paris, Lords of the New Church, Hunters and Collectors, The Truth, the aforementioned Concrete Blonde, Twin Set and the Pearl. That sounds filthy. Uli. And I don't know. I was thinking like freaking Man of War or some other metal band. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, you think there was like more, you know, whenever he's rocking the boombox, there's always kind of got something like that coming out of it. But no, not so much. And it's weird. Yeah, this one of the Concrete Blonde tracks, I think it's Your Haunted Head, that's also in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, as is a track by Lords of the New Church, which is kind of curious.
Interesting. Yeah, I really do dig me some Concrete Blonde. They were one of the tapes I got as a young man I really enjoyed that wasn't ska, okay, people?
Yeah.
Just leave it alone. but this was written by Jim Kauf, who also worked on such things. He's pretty prolific. What have I seen here? I've seen Class 83, obviously not a horror movie, although horrifying if you hate pranks. I don't like pranks in movies. They make me feel bad. He wrote Stakeout the year before this, or the same year as this. Oh boy, with Richard Dreyfuss and Emilia Estevez.
Oh yeah, yeah. I saw the sequel to that on a plane, either coming to or from Florida.
Did
when
you
I was
jump
like
out?
10 or something? Oh, if I'd known how.
Oh my god.
He wrote the first National Treasure, and I was thinking about that recently because somebody made a joke. We can make a topical joke here or borrow one that somebody made, saying, yeah, you could kind of believe right now that Nicolas Cage could steal the Declaration of Independence.
Oh, wow, that hurts. And it's true.
Yeah.
but he also, at the beginning of his career as a writer, he wrote The Boogans, which we covered on the show. Brad and I talked about The Boogans a while ago. And he wrote a horror comedy, which I've heard is not so hot, but I'm going to give it a shot anyway, called Wacko. Mm-hmm. He worked on that. I don't think he was the main writer of Wacko. That's a Graydon Clark movie from 82 that looks fun. And yeah, let's just dive into this plot like I teased. So we start with a really cool title screen. We get security footage of somebody robbing a bank. And he creepily kills somebody and then even more creepily smiles at the camera before shooting the camera. And I'm like, won't someone please protect the cameras? The cops have a huge car chase. This car chase is outrageous.
Oh, it's pretty badass, man. That bit where there's a couple of people who get taken out by the car, one guy who's in a wheelchair, but that stuntman, who, you know, when they do that classic bit of the plate glass window being transported across, that guy who gets hit by the car and rolls over it, oh my fucking God.
What a badass. Jeez.
Yeah, man.
Just going to check the trivia and make sure nobody died.
No, well, I don't think so. I watched a little bit of the commentary with Jack Shoulder and another director, a guy called Tim Hunter, who did River's Edge. And also, and this will be the first of, as promised, many Twin Peaks references I make, he also directed, I think, 3 episodes of the original run of that. Anyway, I digress. They mention that and just say, oh, that's something that stuntmen always talk about. I don't know whether it is for the reason that, oh, yeah, he did. You know, let's hope not. But
yeah.
When I glanced at the trivia, nothing like that came up.
Yay. Yeah, this car chase is crazy. The guy pulls over and crashes his car, and the cops just load him full of bullets. They take him, quote-unquote, alive. And this is when we meet Detective Thomas Beck, played by Michael Nouri, who, oh my gosh, like 131 credits. He was in all kinds of TV stuff. I know him best because I'm a total dork from NCIS.
Oh, right, yeah.
I watched so much frickin' NCIS with my mother-in-law, and then after she passed, Liet and I just kept watching it. We got really addicted to it, and so I know him very well. But he's great, of course, as a frickin' tough detective. Like, this is a genre we never talk about on this show. I don't think we've ever done a buddy cop movie.
Yeah, it's, I was thinking about this last night because I watched it along with it's a double feature with They Live, and both of them being, you know, that kind of intersection, I guess, of sci-fi horror and action. You know, it's not something that you see all the time, but when, you know, it's done well, I mean, yeah, it's just wonderful.
As far as horror goes, he was in a TV movie, a TV series called The Curse of Dracula. So he was in the pilot, and then he was in all the episodes as Count Dracula, a whole 9 episodes in 1979. I must see that.
Yeah.
Because he's got a good look to him. He was in a 1991 movie called The Psychic, which is listed as horror, a horror thriller, not to be confused with Lucio Fulci's The Psychic.
Mm.
Catherine Mary Stewart's in it. We got a Barkins. That's the Barkin. It's next to the Hidden. They almost went with a black partner that gets killed. Mm. He's not, he has a buddy who's technically his partner, sort of.
Yeah.
And that is, they set this guy up as like a major character, and then he just goes away for most of the movie.
I'm not sure, but again, from what I heard of the commentary, it sounds like a lot of that was probably cut out to probably focus more on, I guess, you know, Detective Beck and the, Cal McLaughlin's FBI agent. And also he was saying, I think there were a lot more cops as well and more of that general camaraderie. But again, they just sort of axed it.
Of course, we have a cameo by Bob Shay. Nightmare on Elm Street, folks. You know you're Bob Shay.
Yeah, I said to myself and I was watching, must keep an eye out. And then I guess I forgot, where was he? You see him?
It says, I did not see him. Man in silver Mercedes picking up a gorgeous girl. I'm not sure.
Picking up. Have to go back,
but Richard Brooks is the name of the black detective, is the actor who plays Sanchez. I swear to God, I did not think his name was Sanchez, so I was having trouble finding him. But they do the basketball joke where Detective Beck can't make a basket with his trash in the trash can, but sure enough, his black buddy can do it. And I immediately was like, let's just pump the brakes here, guys. We don't need to go here. So luckily they didn't double down too much on the racist crap, and nobody was, you know, 2 days from retirement or anything like that. I like that. So immediately after they nab this guy who is
take a shot, Twin Peaks references, Chris Mulkey.
Yes.
Without his mullet this time.
Oh my God. He's the intense dude at the beginning who robs the bank. Yeah. And so he's in the hospital with burns all over himself. And that's very concerning to Lloyd Gallagher, played by Kyle MacLachlan, or Kyle MacLachlan of good old Twin Peaks and Blue Velvet. So this was before Twin Peaks, after Blue Velvet. And I guess freaking David Lynch was like, man, you make a great FBI agent, my friend. But yeah, he shows up and it's a big bummer because he's like crashing the party. And Beck is forced to work with him against his will.
And then he's trying to...
God, I really don't feel like recording now. This sucks.
Oh, no. I think we shouldn't have talked about the world before we started.
My sick old friend is with an amateur skill with her. You know, when it's not for our thing, it's going to be...
In an unprecedented move on Hello, This is the Doom Show, I just threw my notes away because I was losing it, folks. I took way too many notes. This movie, simple, fun, brainless for the most part. The moment you try to get into who's where, what's happening, you're going to lose your mind, yeah. Which I just avoided by throwing my notes away. I'm going to uncrumple them and look for jokes. It was a symbolic gesture only. My cat loves to play with paper. So she's now staring at me like, yo, give me that shit. In this film, freaking Kyle MacLachlan is a damn alien from outer space. I believe his planet's called Marklar.
Oh, that's a South Park joke. Ew. Ugh. How many years? I mean, I'm not dissing South Park at all. But I'm not the kind of guy who's going to make a South Park joke on my podcast, even though I just did.
So he's teamed up with the tough cop, which is good old Nuri, our buddy Nuri. And he's your typical tough cop who's going to freaking not do things by the book. And now he's got the straight man. But, you know, to mix things up, the straight man is not even from Earth. Do we know? Is Kyle MacLachlan from frickin' Earth?
I mean, it's not... You can tell something's, like, off or kind of different about him, just how he acts. And, of course, straight away, you know, like when he comes over for dinner, that's where it really, you know, becomes kind of more apparent. Not necessarily, like, telegraphed or anything, but it is really only finally when he confesses. It's like the guy's like, you know, for God's sake, just what the hell's going on? But, yeah, his whole demeanor... And how, again, something from the commentary said MacLachlan, he kind of approached it a bit like he was wearing a mask. You know, he was deliberately kind of inexpressive and kind of holding stuff back, which could, you know, almost just read, not necessarily as alien, but like he's, I don't know if this is politically correct or not, but it's the only way to kind of put it. Like possibly, not like autistic or something. Do you know what I mean? Oh. But he's different. But yeah, I
had not thought of that. That's a good observation.
Yeah, thank you.
It's funny, you know, you take how he is in like Dune. He's more like Dune. This character in Dune. I just said Dune like three times, four times, and he's obviously a lot less like Twin Peaks.
Yeah, totally.
Agent Bilbo Baggins in Twin Peaks, because you know he's enthusiastic. He gets really pissed off. He's cool. He's, you know, obviously he's very nerdy and strange, but he's always like the kind of like super cool character. If only he'd done this as Dougie.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because bunch
at
of
dinner.
My yeah that dinner scene, like I have a few notes about this. Let me think. Yeah, just all of that, it reminds me very much of Dougie in Twin Peaks, The Next Generation. And I had a couple of weird trademark here, although not coined by me, coined by Brad, I think, Simonicities. The telescope that he, I forget what he looks through, he looks at. It says Bushnell on it, and Bushnell Mullins is the name of Dougie's boss in Twin Peaks season 3.
Whoa.
Which I thought that was fucking bizarre. There's a bit where he looks in the mirror, which is almost like identical to the bit where Dougie looks in the mirror. And the bit which really, really struck me was, I didn't go back and check this, but I think, you know, when he comes in and they're saying goodnight to the cop and his wife saying goodnight to the daughter, and he looks at the daughter and I think he tears up, if I'm not mistaken,
yeah.
Which, again, you know, there's pretty much an identical moment where Dougie Cooper, he's looking at Dougie's son, you know, he's in the car and he just like starts crying. You know, it's yep. crazy.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're at dinner. So Beck invites him to dinner, invites Gallagher to dinner, and he has a sip of beer and completely goes full Dougie, completely loses his mind. Drunk off his ass from a sip of Miller High Life or whatever. And he's there. Beck's wife, Barbara, is played by Catherine Cannon, who is a very prolific TV and movie star. This is her only, like, horror-related thing that she did. Just think of a 70s TV show, and she was on it for an episode. She was very, very, very prolific. But yeah, there's that whole moment where their daughter is psychic and she can kind of sense and read Gallagher immediately that he's different.
Yeah.
She just knows. And he even tells him, like, your daughter's very special, but he does it in the creepiest way possible. Like, oh man, it's so funny. And we find out he has this backstory where the alien he's chasing that's jumping from body to body, of course, is killed his family and, as a bonus, killed his partner, too.
Mm.
So ridiculous. I just love that double whammy of giving this emotionless creature more backstory. And, of course, he can relate to Beck because Beck has had a partner that was killed at some point.
Mm.
What would you expect to pay for a flame-broiled Burger King burger? Wait, don't answer yet. What if I told you this regular Burger King burger had 25% more beef than a regular McDonald's burger? Now how much? Don't answer yet. What if I said you could get two of these burgers? Not for $3 or $5, but for just $1. It would leave you speechless.
Two burgers for a buck, now through October 4th at Burger King. The best food for fast times.
Flame broilers are standing by.
My favorite scene in the movie is, of course, our alien is body hopping, and he goes to get some, he has to reload on heavy metal. He's got a heavy metal deficiency. So he goes to the frickin', the cassette store, the music store, and just starts stealing tapes immediately. And the proprietor of said place sees him and tries to stop him with some kind of a blunt club object. I was alive in the 80s and I never saw one of those things before, so I don't know what the hell it's supposed to be. It's like a billy club on steroids. And of course the alien disarms this goofball and then beats him to death over cassette tapes, which I think is the most 80s thing I've ever fucking seen ever. And the guy who runs the music store looks like a freaking mafia dude.
Yeah, I thought, is this like some kind of front or some of the store?
Hey, if you see punk rock posters and new wave posters, get out of there.
Because,
man, they're trying to frickin' fund that gambling and cigarette smoking. I don't know. The gore effects, lots of squibs in this. We're gonna squib out and we're going to have a disgusting burnt corpse later. But the big thing is this alien gets coughed up. It's not subtle at all. This alien is as big as a small dog and it just squeezes out of a person's mouth horrifically.
Yeah, I forget who it was. I want to say it's one of the guys in the hospital beginning. He'd seen them doing this effect sequence, just cramming this thing into the model of his head, and he just was like, no, I'm not watching this. See you later.
Bye. People who worked on the effects.
I saw Howard Berger in there, but I don't think... Oh, yeah, Kurtzman as well. Kevin Yeager, is that how you say his name? From obviously being a New Line production. I bet there's tons of crossover with Nightmare on Elm Street. In fact, curiously, on the credits, I guess because this was the same year as Dream Warriors, they have the same production company or whatever it is, you know, on the copyright. So it's Third Elm Street Venture again, which was kind of a bit weird. But like I say, it's the same year, so sort of figures.
Man, what a time. What a great time.
Mm.
This just came out in such a wonderful era for freaking movies, dude. And just having like Bob Shea in there and everybody, that was like, seeing his name in the credits just made me laugh because I was like, oh my God, I love Bobby so much.
And now we didn't mention Lin Shaye either, did we? Who she gets a bit of fair bit of screen time in this.
Yeah, thing. Yeah, Lin Shaye, freaking our horror scream queen now. She's like horror royalty now.
Mm.
That's so funny. She plays the assistant of a governor, and I was so hoping she was going to get the alien dude. Give her a little more to do than just be like, oh, I'm concerned. Mm. Hello?
Mm. Oh, also, I think in some of the same scenes, or at least one of the same scenes as her, we have another Freddy's Revenge alumnus coming back. Good old, can I never say this name, Clu Gulager.
Yeah, that's right. Wow. I always say Gallagher, but yes, it is.
Yeah, my brain wants to say
Gulager. Return of the Living Dead. Nightmare on Elm Street 2, like we were saying, Feast 2 and the first Feast, and just, oh my gosh. Ooh, he was in The Willies. Mm.
Oh, I told you about that, didn't I? Oh my God, I got burned by that movie so bad. Yeah.
Not good.
Not while watching it, just when I looked into it, shall we say.
Yeah, don't look up that director, folks.
Oh my God,
no, he was in something called Teen Vamp, which I went from not knowing it existed to I must see this immediately just now while we were talking.
Isn't he in The Uninvited as well?
Oh my God. He sure was. That's in crazy. That's what I said. Man, it has been way too long since I've watched Uninvited. You want to talk about acting? Alex Cord and George Kennedy and Clu Gulager, damn it, trying to chew their way out of the frickin' movie, man. Holy shit. I mean, that's Alex Cord's thing, but I think when Alex Cord is in a project, everyone tries to match his fucking ham shit. I love Alex Cord. Anytime you want to do The Uninvited, we'll do that shit.
Sure.
Which I like how IMDb has it as Uninvited and not The Uninvited. Oh, that's my phone. Hold on.
Ooh.
Gee, I got spammed.
Oh, no.
And that's right. My ringtone is House by the Cemetery. You're welcome. What a cool dude I turned out to be. Good thing I'm married or I'd be single. Hello? Cinematographer on this movie is really good. Like, this movie looks amazing.
Mm.
This is Jacques Haitkin, or Haitkin, from Brooklyn, New York. But this dude shot so much stuff. 86 credits and counting. Nope, and not and counting. He stopped in 2012, so maybe he retired. Maniac Cop 3, frickin' Shocker, Cherry 2000, oh my God, My Demon Lover, of course, Nightmare on Elm Street 1 and 2, that's why his name is so familiar to me, I'm having trouble remembering things. Wow, a movie I've always tried to get into, but I could never do it, maybe I should try it again, The House Where Evil Dwells, 1982, The Ghost Samurai movie.
Oh, wow.
Edward Albert and Susan George, Doug McClure, it's pretty wild. But I remember not liking it as a kid. Maybe I just need to not be a kid.
Hmm.
Mommy, wow. Bum, ba, ba, da, da. I'm a big kid now. I like the music in this movie.
Yes, I was going to bring that up. Specifically, a couple of scenes or cues at one point. You might know which bit I mean, where it goes wild.
Mm-hmm. And there's that, like, that little bit of... Italian horror, like it's to me it sounds like what's that guy's name, Simon Boswell, so
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
obviously Simon Boswell is not Italian, but he did a lot of Italian, like, horror stuff,
may as well be, yeah, by now,
and yeah, so he it feels like they were just jamming on his stuff there, but yeah, this guy Michael, I like this, oh, that name Convertino. Oh, he did the music for Children of a Lesser God. Oh, my God. He did the music for Aspen Extreme. Oh, my God. He did the music for Jungle to Jungle. But let's talk about the freaking grip. Joey Alvarez gripping like a bastard.
You did just remind me of one towards the end of the cast credits bit of trivia, which blew my mind.
Tell me.
God, I'd be remiss if I forgot about this. So did you recognize the dog?
The dog did look a little familiar. Was that the one from Down and Out in Beverly Hills or something?
I had his thing up before. I'm not sure about that. Now, before I mention that, when he first appears, because it's after, I think, he swallowed the alien, I had another kind of simonicity with this. When I was watching the film, I went for a snack and grabbed an apple, of all things. And when I came back, God. Yeah, that was the bit where the cop goes and grabs an apple and then gets fucking the dog, you know, jumps through the door and just, like, drop kicks into the fridge. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this. But anyway, so that was mind-blowing enough. And then when I saw in the credits, so the dog is called Jake, had 5 credits. The Boy Who Could Fly, 1986, The Hidden, mm-hmm. where he's playing, well, I'll tell you, come to that. He's in Two Moon Junction the same year as Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master, where he plays Kincaid's dog, Jason. Now, this is what blew my mind. Did you see what the dog is called in The Hidden?
Roy the dog.
Roy the dog, and he's called Jason in flipping Dream Master.
Oh,
what?
My God, that's right. He's the peer.
Yeah, I mean, what is going on there? I mean, we're like New Line already. Because there's that whole, like, with The Hidden, people, when they talk about, God, what's it called? Jason Goes to Hell. Whenever they talk about that movie, they always mention The Hidden, saying, oh, The Hidden did it better, blah, 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 which, sure, but, you know, it's, like, a bit different at the same time.
Yeah,
do you
exactly.
Because I think by then New Line had taken over the franchise, where they already then, this is their subtle way of sort of saying, yeah, we've got our eyes on you, you know, eyeing up the franchise.
Would you like to be a contract dog? You could be on our staff. You could be the dog, Roy, Jason, whatever. You pick your projects, buddy. Oh my God, that's brilliant. That scene, that is like the scene when the freaking dog jumps through the door and tackles the freaking cop who he's going to possess. And then, oh yeah, typical 80s stuff in this movie, guns.
Oh yeah.
When I was a kid, I was obsessed with guns, which is hilarious because I don't own a gun now.
Mm.
Like, I drew guns. I had gun books. I was obsessed, like, totally obsessed with guns. Guns, 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 guns. Like, if a movie had a big gun on the VHS cover, I was renting it. And this movie's got machine guns, a flamethrower, all kinds of freaking just everything. Mm. It's great. It's gun porn. Because, of course, the big scene is at the freaking Ferrari dealership, because, you know, this alien loves to steal Ferraris, and he car blocks this guy and steals the keys and goes to his business. And of course, this guy's business is antiques or just importing things. And in the back room, just behind a door, is this arsenal. So he gets a grenade launcher and a machine gun and another gun, and all these guns, 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 guns. Oh, man, it's just fabulous. I love freaking over-the-top 80s gun crapola movies. It's so funny. Gallagher is keeping things from Beck for most of the movie. And I love the part where after they keep losing this alien, which is body hopping, especially after he gets into the stripper. This stripper, who is this actress?
Oh, yeah. Some trivia about her, I think. Ah, yeah. Claudia Christian, is it?
Yes. She is like one of those. Oh, I got 144 credits. Oh, my God. I can't. I mean, I see her. I recognize her from a million things and yet cannot place her until I pull up her freaking things. But she does a strip tease and then she becomes the alien, and the jokes with how crazy and like wild the alien's been, but then just translate that to a woman and it just makes it instantly more ridiculous and awesome. Women are the future of our nation. I'm talking about England. I'm not talking about America.
We don't allow women in America.
Horror wise, she was in Strays from 1991. Same year, she was in Mom. The movie that I remember seeing on cable a lot with her was Hexed.
Mm.
Is she a demon or is she just like an evil woman? I don't remember the plot very well, but it was on cable a lot. And then she was in Maniac Cop 2, which I've seen part of. Because Maniac Cop has Bruce Campbell in it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And then he's just in the sequel for a few minutes.
Right.
Because as soon as he left the sequel, I was like, I'm out. I don't know why. I don't know why I just bailed on Maniac Cop 2. I probably have better taste in movies now, and I would actually like finish it. But I love her as this freaking stripper with machine guns. She screws a guy to death, which happens in the Hidden 2. They thought that was the selling point for Hidden 2, was because men like to get screwed to death.
Not seeing tested well, did it?
It's they like to make the sex act unto death. That's how we're going to call that on this show. The other weirdly racist thing that happens is when police chief has gone insane and is shooting up the whole freaking police station. Sanchez, the black dude, he goes to check on him to make sure he's dead, and they do that, oh, get away from him, because, you know, they don't die when they get shot in this movie, these aliens. Where does the alien shoot him, Simon? Do you remember?
Does he shoot him in the dick or something? I can't
remember. He shoots him right in the dick. And I'm like, you know, if they hadn't done the basketball joke at the beginning, I don't think my brain would have thought of it. But yeah, I did not like that. I was like, no. Back it up, people. Back it up. Let's see. What else you got?
Yeah, I say a lot of, I mean, early on, a lot of like car carnage and also just, well, general carnage candy, like, see, with the guns and all that. Doesn't the stripper, she have like an automatic shotgun or something that she just completely turns a police car into Swiss cheese with, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's before, and that's where I noted the music particularly, where they end up having the kind of rooftop chase. And I can't think how to describe it, but you know what I mean? Where the music becomes almost like comically obtrusive, where it's just like, you know, it's not even like Hans Zimmer, it's like, I can't do it, but you know what I mean. It's just it's almost ridiculous, but I would not fucking change a note of it. It's just like so over the top and just wonderful. I think so when they first go in the room, you know, where it's called the mannequins, like everywhere, and yeah, before they end up on the roof. So I had another note about the dog. So yeah, in Nightmare on Elm Street 4, he kind of brought Jason back to life, didn't he? And he does the same with the Hidden here. Yeah, he's a bit of habit there. Yeah, so I didn't take a lot of plot notes, to be honest. I think my next one is about Danny Trejo.
I wish I had
time to.
I tried to break the episode.
Oh, don't worry. Everything's broken already, so you know I don't think we can. We can go too far wrong. Yeah, he has two lines. I only have one. Because I was just like questioning. It's like, is that what I think it is? He's like, yeah, hey, I need a phone call. What does he say before he gets blasted? It's like, hey, hey, hippie, what kind of dude are you? Or something. And then he gets shot. I think that's his contribution to the film in like two lines.
It is so weird. That is so good. I'm glad you remembered that bit. Because all I remember is Danny Trejo and saying something insane and then dying immediately. God, he's been kicking around Hollywood forever. That's so great.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the first film I've probably seen him in. I mean, you know, like chronologically. Could be. Kind of curious, you know.
The funny thing I thought was like an ego thing for Kyle MacLachlan is, of course, the alien that he's hunting, that he's here to destroy, is this ugly, nasty worm bug thing.
Hmm.
But when it's time for Kyle to pass on his alienage, because, of course, spoiler alert, we warned you, Beck gets, you know, nearly mortally wounded, is in a coma, dying, and Gallagher's like, you know what, I'll make sure that psychic kid has a freaking papa, so I'll jump into his body. It's going to be great.
Mm.
And he's a being of light.
Yeah.
Aww, isn't that sweet? He's not a disgusting, like a big old, like a roach doesn't climb out, like an alien freaking centipede or something. That would have been so awesome.
It would have been great, but, like, yeah, visually you'd think it would not throw people off, but it wouldn't feel right. And also, I'm thinking ahead to the sequel, you know how, I mean, we're going to talk about it, but how in that they've kind of expanded the mythology, I guess, yes, of saying that they are essentially spiritual beings unless they spend too long in the flesh and they become essentially kind of corrupt and just purely carnal beings, you know, which is, you know, having that big gross... physical representation of that would kind of make sense. But I think that was something that was probably more added in the writing of the second script. But I'm just thinking you could kind of go back to this now and sort of make that argument, potentially, you know, that he's not become, you know, that kind of parasitic sort of creature yet.
The whole thing culminates in this big, preposterous freaking ending where, you know, of course, the alien gets into the senator and they have a whole thing where they're like, so... Does these events affect your presidential run? He's like, I want to be president, which is very creepy. And of course, the whole thing just blows up where Kyle MacLachlan runs in, taking bullets left and right, just running and running. And, you know, he's got a bag and you're like, what's this? He's going to blow up the grenade launcher. Nope. They're going to use the old flamethrower that they showed at the police station earlier, because of course the cops confiscated a freaking flamethrower. Which made me think of Night of the Creeps, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, man, love that. But he fries him, and this nasty freaking burnt corpse has to spit out the alien, and he finally spits the alien out, uses the laser gun, boom, explodes the alien. And, man, this movie, what a ride this movie is.
I was going to say, I only have one slight complaint about that scene, that he missed the opportunity. I suppose he couldn't see into the future, but the possessed senator alien thing while he was on fire didn't scream out, fire walk with me. I mean, you know, could you imagine?
Oh, my God. His arms did bend backwards, though.
Yeah, I guess they sort of did, didn't they?
I don't know.
And that also reminds me, there's one more. It's not a Twin Peaks connection, but it's a David Lynch connection. The bit where she's hiding in the closet. The shot is like almost identical to Kyle MacLachlan in the closet in Blue Velvet.
Oh, my God,
it's just like a tiny thing, but you've got to wonder, it's like, did they, you know, was that an intentional callback or not?
I love it.
Oh, so I guess it's a good opportunity for me to get my last of my Twin Peaks connections out of my system here.
Please,
so,
do it.
Yeah, we already mentioned the seven names recurring between this film and the original series anyway. So we've got Kyle, of course, Chris Mulkey we mentioned, a guy called Jack McGee, who I think he plays a bartender in both. I looked at this yesterday. I'm pretty sure I'm right on that. So, yeah, he's a bartender in The Hidden, and he... Where's Twin Peaks gone? He did a lot of stuff in
1990. He did look familiar.
Yeah, he's a bartender in season two of Twin Peaks as well. So there's that.
Nice.
Then a guy in the camera department whose name I'm not going to attempt to pronounce. Somebody who did stunts. A guy called Frank Byers, who I think he was a camera operator on The Hidden. And he shot pretty much all of the original run of Twin Peaks, minus the pilot. Then somebody called Richard Whittaker. I think it says he was an actor in Lethal Weapon, but I think, yeah, mainly stunts. Oh, technical advisor. Right, interesting. So, yeah, there you go.
According to the trivia, the actual name of the planet, the star where Gallagher's from, is called Rasulhag, or Rasulhagua, which he actually just straight up says at dinner table. They're like, where are you from? Rasulhag. And they're like, oh, is that up north? Claudia Christian, our stripper character here, who played the stripper character, she got injured by... an exploding prop that scratched her cornea, and she was always scarred by that and scared of weapons. And it says that when she was on Babylon 5, she would instinctively turn her face away when pulling the trigger, even though they were adding all the effects later. She was still freaked out from stunt guns, which is crazy. She is supposed to be a stripper who gets completely naked, but the producers found her breasts visually inadequate. Which I'm like, oh, thanks, guys. So they decided to do her costume to emphasize her butt. Apparently, they liked her buttocks very much. Oh, my God. Michael Nuri was up for the role of Martin Riggs in Lethal Weapon, but the role went to Mel Gibson, as we all know. Jack Shoulder, the director, says this film is his favorite. I love it.
I was going to say, I mean, you could probably guess which my favorite of his, the three films I've seen of his are, although I forgot to mention it before, I think it was the last episode that you and Brad put out. You did some 1982 slashes, mm-hmm, I think, including Alone in the Dark, which, I like that to begin with, but just the more I watch it, I think, God, that's a real, I don't want to say underrated. I mean, maybe, I don't know.
Absolutely. Very much so. People don't talk about it enough.
No, you're right, yeah.
Okay, so here's the list of people considered to play Tom Beck.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Okay, so Detective Tom Beck, Mel Gibson, Harrison Ford, Kurt Russell, Christopher Lambert, Michael Keaton, Richard Dreyfuss, Ron Perlman, Stephen Lang, Michael Biehn, Dennis Quaid, Jeff Bridges, Nick Nolte, Gary Busey. I love how those two are next to each other. Frickin' Tommy Lee Jones, Richard Gere, Burt Reynolds, Don Johnson, Sylvester Stallone, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and of course, Bruce Willis. What I love about that is, you know, maybe in 87, two of those dudes were actually maybe less than that, were actually auditioned maybe. Like, I swear, like, I don't think Ron Perlman was as big of a draw at that point, because who was Ron Perlman in the 80s? Like, I don't think people really...
Oh, I don't even know. I think I'd seen him. Was he in, and I forget even which year this was, in The Name of the Rose, I think.
He was in the Caveman movie, because, of course, Ron Perlman. No offense. And I think he was in Kronos. But yeah, I can't remember. Kronos was 90s?
I think I want to say 93, maybe.
Okay, so yeah, it would have been before... That would have been after this stuff. But yeah, I just... Man... So fun. So fun. But Simon, how do you feel about TH, as we call it around here, The Hidden?
I like this movie a lot. I hadn't seen it for maybe a couple of years when I rewatched it yesterday. And yeah, I think it really it holds up. Like you say, it's kind of... I think he even sort of alluded to this, Jack Shoulder, in the commentary. You know, it's a bit of a B movie in some ways, but, you know, made very well. And like with certainly, you know, you wouldn't think that from the budget. But this, and maybe as we'll talk about kind of expanded more in the sequel, there are moments, you know, again, like that whole scene and where he comes to dinner and just even that little moment where he's looking at the little kid and all that, where, you know, there's this kind of, they maybe don't dive super deep into it, but this kind of additional nice almost like subtext to it, for want of a better word, of, you know, using it as kind of a device to sort of talk about, you know, what it is to be human and all that. Like I say, I don't think it massively goes into it. It's not trying to beat you around the head with anything, but it's nice that extra kind of layer is there, you know. Yeah, no, I have a lot of time for this movie. I think it's nice. Pretty underrated, I'd say.
I remember seeing it as a kid and it made an impression on me, not a big one, but I did remember it. It stuck with me. And then sometime in the early 2000s, I rented the tape and was a little let down. It just didn't catch me. I remembered it being stranger than it was, because this movie, it leans towards the absurd and the action packed. It's less about the weird possibilities of this kind of a plot. Because like we were talking about, this is a buddy cop movie first. Sci-fi horror second. I would say I like this film. I don't love it. I just don't know if I'm going to get a lot of rewatchability.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I don't know if I'm going to get a lot of rewatchability out of it.
Yeah, it's one that's good to, like I say, come back to every few years or whatever, you know, when you're in the mood. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's not one that I'd be reaching for all the time, which is no knock on it. It's just what it is, you know.
It does slow down. The crazy pace has a little bit of a drag, and I mean like a couple minutes where it feels like it has two endings. It's not a detriment, because they reward you, because the ending, the double whammy of the senator shit and the body switching, the final body switching, the reward of that preposterous crap is so great. I totally forgive it for that little, just a tiny little bit of, what are we doing now? Oh, now it's in this cop. Oh, okay. You know, but get over it.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
The racial strangeness, which luckily they keep to a minimum, still stuck out for me. I love the goopy alien stuff. I love the squibs. Like I said, this is a very 80s movie. Holy shit. It's hard to get more 80s than this. All we needed was like a kooky girl character in a wild outfit.
Yeah.
Like that's the only thing, like a Valley Girl to like spice things up. That would have been brilliant.
One thing that they kind of, I think, and I don't know whether this was a conscious decision to avoid it looking very 80s, who's saying in the, I think especially the production design, but the overall color palette, you're really trying to avoid the color blue. So you know, it's like almost,
yeah,
you know, the opposite of like, I don't know, like a Michael Mann sort of 80s movie or something, you know, going for like a totally different look.
Hey, you take blue away from Michael Mann, their career is over. That's it. So, folks, we're going to take a momentary break here, and then we're going to come back and talk about the sequel to this film called The Hidden Two from 1993. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Get ready, folks. Buckle up your butts, and then I guess unbuckle them. I don't know why. You don't have to do what I say.
Sequel mania is coming to this store. Following on from Cyborg and the Philadelphia Experiment, a sequel to the video smash The Hidden is due to be unleashed in January. As powerful and shocking as its predecessor, The Hidden 2 takes you to new boundaries of terror. You have been warned.
In 1987, The Hidden exploded on the screens around the world, instantly becoming an international cult classic. But it didn't end there. After 5 years of silence, something has awakened in The Hidden 2.
Folks, you just heard, if I can find it, the trailer for The Hidden 2. If not, I'll just have that dial-up internet sound go, wee, 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 wee. Everyone remembers that because they were born in the year 1980. Maybe.
Oh, God, that just now, like, just working with people who are, like, 16 or whatever makes me feel so old. They will never heard that
yeah,
sound.
Yeah, I know. My students who work for me at the library, I had to get over it real quick.
Mm.
That whole, like, oh, my God, this person wasn't even born when I was in graduating high school. So I just get over it.
Yeah.
Like, I was in college when you were conceived, you son of a bitch. It's crazy. So I just get over it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I already have a failing body to make me feel old. I don't need to also have the attitude.
Seven.
So let's see. Where is the hiding too? I have all the windows open. Wow, computers are fun. So this is directed by Seth Pinsker.
Hmm.
This was his first feature film, I think. He did a couple shorts, TV shows, and then he did freaking The Hidden 2 and has never done a feature film since.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah, because this is not bad at all. This would be a good stepping stone here.
Mm.
Now, as we said, the movie The Hidden didn't make shit for money.
No.
So it just makes you wonder, why is there a sequel 6 years later?
Oh,
like 6 years later, title recognition from the VHS? Because I'm thinking...
Well, maybe... Yeah, so go on.
No, I'm just thinking that VHS must have been pretty hot.
Yeah, I was going to say, it goes back to what you were saying before about you think it started to recoup a lot more money on video. And it feels like the sort of film that would, you know, would literally garner a bit of a cult following, I guess.
He also wrote this bad boy based on Jim Koff's... characters and script. So writer and director rocked this thing. Let's see, we've got cinematography by Brian England. That's Robert Englund's brother. But no, this dude has such a cool freaking career as far as cinematographer and you know, camera equipment, like other things. You can tell he worked his way up to become a cinematographer because he shot he was an electrician on Superstition from 82. He was a frickin' director of photography of Second Unit to yours and my favorite, To All a Good Night.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. Additional photography on Scalps, which I've still not seen. But as far as her, I just changed his gender. his cinematography, he frickin' shot Cheerleader Camp.
Hmm.
From 88. Have you seen... Is that 88? Yes. Have you seen Cheerleader Camp yet?
No, I mean, it is right on the top of my list. It just keeps getting lost in the shuffle. Let's just say,
make a prediction right here.
Mm-hmm.
You may want to cover it when you see it. When you see this thing called Cheerleader Camp, I strongly suggest you and I do it. Because holy shit. But he also shot a little movie called The American Scream, which Jeffrey and I have covered. We have not released that episode yet. Let's just say I'm glad he's still working.
Hmm.
But I won't say any more about The American Scream because that is an upcoming episode. But he freaking shot I, Madman.
Yes.
Speaking of things that you and I will discuss one day.
Hmm.
Maybe a Christmas episode. Wow. Hmm. And back to back to back. Hmm. In 89, he shot Wicked Stepmother, which if you haven't seen is ridiculous. He shot the aforementioned I, Madman. He shot one of my favorite films I watched this year, My Mom's a Werewolf. Holy crap. I love that movie so much. And Friday the 13th, Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan.
Yes.
A Nafa favorite. Our dearly departed Nafa. That was his favorite frickin' Friday the 13th movie.
Oh, I love that so much.
Which says a lot about our friend. Mm. And then he shot freaking Gate 2. He loved those sequels, I guess.
Mm. Mm. Oh, yeah. He did, speaking of that, in 1985, he did, what was this, Young Lady Chatterley 2?
Oh, God, what is that? Oh, no. Oh, pornography. That's the Skinamax channel right there.
Adam West. What?
What the fuck?
Professor Arthur Bohart Jr.
Folks, we just Sybil uncovered... Danning. Oh, no. We just uncovered a universe we did not know existed.
Oh, my God.
Is this an actual sequel? Or no, this is an actual sequel. So in 1977, they made Young Lady Chatterley. Oh, brother. I don't recognize any of these people in it. But yeah, apparently it was popular enough to have a sequel freaking 8 years later. Oh boy. I feel like the universe, like the rug of the universe has been ripped out from under me.
Oh yeah. Something has just gone out of joint, I think.
So this movie picks up 15 years after the events of the first Hidden. Let me see if I can find a Hidden 2 VHS. Hopefully I won't go down the horrible wormhole I did with Go Duck Go. That was terrible. Come on, Google, help me out here. Hidden 2 VHS. This is the kind of content that Mark was paying for right here. Mark, you're welcome. He's like, I thought I got you guys a microphone, not a frickin' clickety-clack keyboard. The Hidden 2, please be in English. That's the German one. Damn it. Wait, here we go. I think I have found the British VHS tape for The Hidden 2, Electric Boogaloo. The tagline is, they live for lust. They live for power. They live forever. 15 years have passed since The Hidden made the first terrifying appearance. The horror has been forgotten. But The Hidden live on. Lives on. Live on? Oh, that's plural now. Deep within the bowels of a monolithic, abandoned old freighter, I guess, a new spawning is reaching maturity. The freighter has been turned into a wild, futuristic dance club, and the sexually charged atmosphere arouses the hibernating aliens. Oh, my God. Jason McLaughlin, not to be confused with the actor, Kyle McLaughlin, is the only man who knows the truth. Outwardly, he has the appearance of a young FBI agent. In reality, he is an alien officer. Only he and Juliet Beck, the daughter of one of the Hidden's first victims, knows the potential disaster. They are mixing up this plot, which may strike. And time is running out because the first fully matured creature has just claimed its first victim. Wow. Oh, Polygram video.
Yeah.
Good times. So, holy crap. This starts with stock footage from the first film. It is important because they switch a few things up. The dog scene has been rearranged so that instead of the dog getting the alien in the middle of the movie, the dog has now eaten part of the alien.
Yeah.
Now it's going to spawn. And dude, it's ridiculous. I think someone saw The Thing. I'm looking for a credit for the dog.
Yeah, when I had his page open before, the dog from the first one, I don't think he was in the sequel. apart from, well, yeah, like you say, special appearance by, I guess. You know, like Camel Clock.
It's a totally different dog. Oh, brother. Oh, one of the user reviews, that's a 1-star review. It just says, hide it somewhere. Oh, the trivia I love for this is that it takes place in 2002. So the scary future, 2002.
Yeah, they should have been like, I don't know, sort of rocking baggy jeans and chain wallets and...
Yes.
You know, they're more like, what year was fucking Freddy versus Jason? You know, like that sort of thing. They had a rave in that, though, didn't they?
I think. They sure did.
Rave in a cornfield.
They sure did.
Yeah.
I hate clip show movies, and I'll give this one a pass because, yes, it is a clip show. You got a whole 12 minutes of the end of The Hidden Ones jammed in here. But, you know, if you fast forward too much, you'll miss the new details.
Yeah, yeah.
But the dog explodes, and now we have multiple aliens all over the place. So the alien jumps from person to person individually, but then in doggy, he can, you know, multiply and keep the memories and everything. Like, it's for some reason, these creatures, which are babies, are all connected somehow. And he goes in this factory, which apparently, according to the VHS tape, is a freighter. I didn't get that. And, The thing I thought was going to be unique to the movie is this dark atmosphere of this freighter / warehouse. Not so much. We get one or two daytime scenes. This movie is, I guess, going for that neo-noir, like 90s noir, where everything's just dark all the time.
Yeah.
Which is good because this DVD looks really nice. Thank God. I don't know if you saw like a VHS rip or something.
No, I think it was from the DVD. But okay, yeah, good. I don't that came out over here.
Yeah, the New Line Cinema DVD of Hidden and Hidden 2 it's brand new. It's like $50 to $70.
Oh my God.
But if it's used, which is how I got it when we were talking about covering this, it was like $7 or $8 for a used copy.
All right.
Nice. But it is a nice. I mean, it's not a double. It's not a flip disc either. It's the two movies are on one side of the disc, and they both look amazing. So I'm just like, whoa. And I bugged. There's a guy on Twitter. I love his freaking feed. He's at Ghoul Basement. He reviews DVD players. Like, he's always scouring charity shops and freaking thrift stores to find old, like really nice high-end DVD players that are totally worthless now. And he just makes sure they work, and he repairs them and he sells them. Like, he's really, really freaking cool. He knows his shit. So I was like, hey, check out the Hidden 2. Look how awesome this DVD is. And he, of course, did not respond because I'm a fucking nerd.
I saw you asking about that, and it got me thinking. So it's a new line, comment. And it's whenever it was, early mid-2000s or something when they put it out.
Yeah, 2005.
I don't know whether they distributed this as well. I would think they would. So by that point, all the Lord of the Rings films have been out on DVD, wouldn't they? And they're like, you know, especially when they got into those like extended editions, like probably some of the best DVDs that have been done, you know. So yeah, it looks like they were treating their stuff pretty well. I can't say, so I think there's been some controversy about the Nightmare on Elm Street box set, so the quality of the transfers back on DVD, I think. But
and it's funny, look at the DVD market in 2010, 2011. That's when you got all the discs that are failing now.
Yeah.
So like, Liette and I were buying up all the Marvel movies because we're cool dudes. And we've had to replace 2 or 3 discs already because disc rot.
Oh, yuck.
Like crazy. Just like, I'm like, this is not even a decade old yet. What the hell?
Yeah, that's.
And then I realize it's 2021. So these guys show up to scope out this this warehouse for their rave, and I started laughing so hard. I'm like, oh my god. And then, of course, I double, triple laughing when some of those freaking dialogue hits from these guys. You know, if you've ever seen the show called Inspector Morse, and you thought the rave episode of that was out of touch.
Oh, God.
This, like, actually makes that movie, I mean, that TV show episode look, like, on the spot. Like, they knew exactly what the scene was like. It's so funny. This can't even get the ravers right. This can't get the music right. They have this rave going, and I'm jumping around because I don't care. I have to talk about this rave. They got this rave going, and it's obviously like, you know, kind of crappy house music, not even like something that I was even tempted to tap my foot to. But the dude has a 45 on the Wheels of Steel turntables. He doesn't have cassettes or a DAT or like CDs. This guy is playing shit off of a freaking, like, a 45 he got at the freaking thrift store. Like, oh, I was just going to mention You Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog by Elvis is on the freaking, on the Wheels of Steel.
Yeah, but these guys are bullshit on all of that, aren't you?
She's saying, I need to be heard. But the the rave, one guy looks at this freaking warehouse and goes, far fucking out. Then he gets possessed by the alien. He gets the alien up his butt or in his mouth. I'm not sure. I can't tell the difference between butts and mouths. And then they decide to break, and they're like, let's get out of here. We've got a rave to promote.
You're kind of almost expecting at this point, you're saying that, you know, hip and with it, these people. You're almost expecting Karl McLaughlin to come back and ask, what year is this? You know, it's just. Oh. And did you spot the guy who's mixing drinks? He looks like the singer out of Rage Against the Machine.
Yes.
That was, that was something.
So the alien goes out into the world. He finds out he loves peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And the dialogue in this, starting with these ravers, is all the F-bombs. This is one of those really tacky, garbage screenplays where, instead of saying something normal like a human, they throw in fucking and fuck a lot just to make it sound extra edgy. And so, like, we're going to get the R rating anyway, bro. Let's kick it. I mean, let's fuck it. Let's fuck it old school. So the connecting pieces here, besides our aliens, is that Mr. Nuri is not in the movie. He's been replaced by another actor. Seamlessly. But see, Tom Beck is played by somebody named Michael Weldon.
Yeah, I had a double take when I saw that.
He's not looking so good. He's aging prematurely because I guess the aliens wear the body down. His daughter, who was the psychic in the first movie, is now just grown up. She didn't really retain that. The most interesting part about her was this like intuition and kind of like psychic knowledge that something was going on. I really thought they were going to play up that. They did not. But she's all grown up, and she's played by Kate Hodge, that I kind of recognize.
So she's in,
God help me,
Leatherface, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, which I've only seen once, so I don't
know. Oh, yeah, me too. I haven't seen that in years. Wow. There's an episode we need to do. We need to just talk about all the freaking, the crazy Chainsaw series, man. That'd be fun. But yeah, she's fairly prolific. Lots of TV stuff. She's Silk Stockings. The Louie Show. Oh, God. Manhattan, A to Z, Level 9, One Life to Live. Yeah, she is, you know, she likes to work. She's in Beach Rats. So she's all grown up now, and she is sad about her dad being a corpse. There's a hilarious scene where she has to identify his corpse. And the unfeeling, uncaring morgue worker guy is then all of a sudden like, hey, do you need a minute? Like, he clearly does not give a fuck. But she runs into our alien McLaughlin, played by Raphael Sbarge. Sbarge. Dude, holy crap. 171 credits? I mean, I recognize this guy, but again, like we were talking about with the actress from the first one, it's like I recognize the face, but I cannot place where I know this person from.
I think with both of these, it's mostly people who are very prolific on TV. And there's a few, like, saying he's in, like, Risky Business and this My Science Project.
Oh, wow, in the 80s. Yeah.
But, yeah, then beyond that, it's mostly TV, I think.
Miracle Mile. Oh, it's a voice. Okay.
Ah, right.
Yeah, there's a movie I can't sit through without fucking wanting to die. Hey, people, I'm not saying it's a bad movie. Mm. It's too good. Can't handle that topic.
It's fair enough.
It's too soon. The frickin' nuclear apocalypse just happened.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, My Science Project is one I have been meaning to rewatch for a while. It was a movie I loved as a kid and then just forgot it existed until like the 2000s. And I've been meaning to rewatch it. I just haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not trying to do like an impersonation of the Kyle MacLachlan's performance. He's doing his own thing with it.
Yeah.
He definitely is less patient with humans than his other guy. He takes some chances and he likes to scare the shit out of Juliet, Kate Hodges' character, by just showing her the truth, because we don't have time for this is he an alien, is he crazy thing. Mm. So we get rid of that real quick. We get our aforementioned tacky-ass rave sequence where the alien takes the opportunity to sneak into a woman who's having sex with a guy through his pants on the dance floor, jumps into her mouth while she's orgasming or something, so he thinks it's hot as hell. Then, with the alien in her, she gets all riled up and kind of fucks him to death. I love this part. It's so bad. It's probably the worst moment in the movie, I think.
Mm.
Which is not... Hey, we're going to talk about how we like about this one, so just hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on to what we got. All of the people are dressed like grunge musicians at the rave, so it's a grunge rave.
Like Cassette Man, Rage Against the Machine. He's working on the bar.
The alien escapes from McLaughlin's attack. Like, they have a bunch of face. I was like, you can kill me or you can kill them, referring to all the other aliens that are hiding in this freaking quote-unquote freighter. He gets away and then dies, and the alien, which the aliens are so much more disgusting in this movie. Actually, the gore is just wild in this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very curious, because this felt like the handiwork of, like, obviously a different set of special effects dudes. Kind of scrolling to see if I see anybody. Todd Masters, Dave Snyder, Ron Trost. Let's see if I... Oh, wow. So these dudes worked on, like, Slither and Fido, which is a ridiculous zombie movie I haven't seen in many years. And the one guy went on to do some Star Trek stuff. Leprechaun 2. Hey. Oh, shit. Dave Snyder, he was on... he was the project lead on frickin' Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight.
Mm.
Oh, my God. He worked on The Prophecy. Now, that's... Not The Prophecy I thought it was. Looking no, that is The Prophecy I thought it was. I was thinking of...
I'm sorry. I was thinking of... what was that movie? I was thinking of something totally... Just ignore me.
I'm looking a bit further down at Todd Masters' IMDb, and there's a few... Oh, some things we've already mentioned. So Night of the Creeps...
Wow.
A film that I was going to mention in relation to The Hidden, sort of, I think it's a buddy cop movie, sort of, like, through zombie movie, Dead Heat.
Holy shit, yeah, I just rewatched that for the first time in a long time.
Mm.
Nice. And, I like Dead Heat. It's very much akin to The Hidden's cop bullshit.
Yeah,
like, it's got that,
exactly.
But it's even more chauvinistic, retarded. I mean, chauvinistic, mentally deranged. How about that?
I know you mean that. And, Nightmare on Elm Street, The Dream Child, Greta prosthetic. So I think, Greta's it. Oh, yeah, we all remember that bit. Oh, my God, so, still recovering.
So, folks, if you're looking for a reason to watch this movie outside of your obsession with the hidden universe, just the gore in this is worth checking out. It's disgusting.
Yeah, and one last one I'll mention for our other thing. Well, two, Hellraiser 4, Bloodline, and... I've only seen this once, but I remember there was some pretty disgusting gore in this. Was Necronomicon from the same year as this?
Yeah, dude. What a pedigree. That's great stuff. Cool. There's a whole thing where our buddy McLaughlin doesn't know how to brush his teeth.
And
part of this romance, budding romance between him and Juliet, is she brushes his teeth. And I had to change my underwear so many times. That is like my fetish.
Oh, it's so hot.
It's so, I'm so glad. If they've been using that like red toothpaste, the close up, I wouldn't be comfortable talking about pornography with you. Alien's defeated and he goes back to his planet without Stang. But dun dun dun, stinger, we find out Juliet has aliens inside her because, of course, the alien kissed her. And even though we didn't see any pulsing, throbbing exchange between them, she still got possessed. So that's why they made the hidden three that doesn't exist, I don't think. Maybe they skipped and made hidden five.
Hidden six, De Profundis, the black cat.
They moved the five around, so it looks like the shidden. My favorite line in the movie is where he talks about his frickin' alien world and talks about like their book of books.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he drops a quote from this thing. This is total gibberish.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's so great. The alien language is just there's just what I said. The alien language is... Oh, yeah, the lady... I already forgot her name, bless her. Kate Hodge is not Elizabeth Shue, no matter how much the stylist tried to convince you of that. Give me Elizabeth Shue's head, please. Yeah, dude, that's like, I don't know, what do you got? Anything else on the plot before we just talk about what we witnessed?
Nothing, yeah, just one sec. Sorry, nothing on the plot, but I had a double take. I was looking at the cast again, and it said Danny McBride, but not...
Oh, but nah.
you want to go to his IMDb page though. His picture is quite something. And his
hey,
yeah, exactly. And his I'll read some of this. Is so I guess he was he was a stuntman or something. Oh no, he's the rave girl's date. And I'll just I'm just looking at his bio here. This is quite something as well. As the quintessential Navy brat, McBride spent his formative years living a nomadic lifestyle, moving from one tropical locale to another. Okay.
Good for him.
Yeah, indeed. Anyway, so what were we saying? Overall thoughts, was it? I can't remember.
Yeah, either. If you had any other plot things you can talk about or...
No, I just said it. Yeah, I took even, because I hadn't seen this, so I took very few, certainly plot notes. I just had a couple of quotes I'd written down. I think I missed out a lot of the rave dialogue, but the first quote I'd written down was, I think, early on when he's obviously hungry and steals that guy's sandwich, and the guy's like, Jesus, it's only a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You know, and later when, I guess, is it... I've forgotten the name now. Juliet, she's sort of trying to teach, the Earth idioms to McLaughlin, kick butt, ice the mother, you know, that sort of thing.
Oh, no. I'm going to go ahead and just say, this was worth my time.
I agree.
It does lose its pacing. It's not, I would not say it's greatly paced, but it's very simple story, very scaled down. I can't find the budget. I think it's like a fifth or less. This could be like, I'd say maybe $1 million movie in 90s money.
I mean,
maybe.
I think we said, didn't we? I can't remember whether we did. It's straight to video, it seems.
Yes, it is absolutely straight to video. Cash in on the title recognition. But it's fun. It's silly. The gore, like I said, is incredible. I love the gore effects. The chemistry between the two people actually works.
Yeah.
It's just strange. Like, I love how I used to catch these kinds of movies, these 90s, especially early 90s sci-fi movies or thrillers or horror movies that just have this crazy tone. They feel really artificial because it's all like cheap sets where they have to stay in one location or two locations where none of it feels fleshed out or real.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's just part of its charm, is it's so strange and enveloping. Like I said, if you like the first one, give the second one a shot. It's, don't get your hopes up.
Yeah, I mean, there's overlap, but it's kind of different. But yeah, it kind of surprised me. I thought there was, you know, sort of expanding from some of the, you know, whole, you know, what is it to be human sort of thing that's kind of hinted at in there. I think that was kind of greatly sort of expanded here, and, you know, with the mythology and sort of it snuck up on me. I thought there's some kind of surprising, you know, might even say like pathos to it, you know, with the, you know, whole sort of love affair and, you know, the inevitable sort of end of that and how they talk about, you know, God, I forget now. I should have probably written some of it down, but he even says, you know, once he translates, like you say, the alien gobbledygook to, you know, basically the gist of it was, although, you know, it comes off a lot, better than this, you know. I'm not trying to make fun of it. It makes me think of Bill and Ted, you know, sort of quoting or translating Socrates. You know, it's like, all we are is dust in the wind, sort of thing. You know,
I like that. I just noticed that one of the producers on this, the executive producer, also executive produced Critters 3 and 4 right before this. Wow, it's like sequels, baby. Oh man, well thank you, Mark, for picking this and helping out the show as always. I really am glad we went down this strange broken because of me discussion. And I'm really glad it got me to finally watch that sequel. What the hell?
Yeah, me too. Like I said, I don't think until you mentioned it, I'd even known it had a sequel.
Yep. I was as surprised as you were, but only slightly less because I'd bought it. Like, oh, hi. Oh, hi, Mark, as we would say. Well, Simon and I have lots of plans, lots of ideas. We've even got some, you know, at least one episode in the can already that just requires that little thing called editing, whatever. So if you're waiting for us to conclude our discussion on the Nightmare film series, the Nightmare on Elm Street film series, we're going to get back to that one of these days. Keep watching this channel. So Simon, thank you for hanging out, dude.
Oh, always a pleasure, man.
Yeah, it has been too long.
God, it has, isn't it?
That's how people describe me. Too long-winded.
Too hot to handle, too fresh, too furious.
Too Wong Fu. was that movie Too Wong Fu, thanks for something?
Oh, that does ring a bell, yeah. But no. Oh, it's got me thinking again of that. Oh. What was it when somebody had, it was like a plane crash and somebody had like changed all the passenger names to like, holy fuck, something Wong and all of that. No, that will never leave my brain.
It's Too Wong Fu, thanks for everything, comma, Julie Newmar.
That? Oh, right.
It's Wesley Snipes, Patrick Swayze, and John Leguizamo in drag.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was a remake of the Priscilla Queen of the Desert, or was it a ripoff?
Ah, right.
I can't remember.
Yeah, it's just a few years after or something, isn't it? Yeah. Wow.
It does not, you know, it does not say that it's a remake at all. I think this is just a ripoff.
Yeah, I mean, that was a...
Or wait, did it beat Priscilla? That was 95.
Yeah, that was a pretty successful
Queen of the Desert, 1994. Beat it. Oh, Hollywood. I love Hollywood's stance on these things. Like, hey, it's just something in the ether, man. We weren't making, like, five movies about undersea monsters the same year.
We didn't
know.
You know, get outbid for this script and thought, fuck it, we'll make our own, you know?
Yeah. What about volcano movies? Anyway, I have already digressed at the end of the show.
Oh, boy.
So, folks, take care, and we'll be back. So, bye.
Boy.
There, we did it. We made it.
Oh, wow.
We made it crapping.
Hidden.
This is the Doom Show is a proud member of the Legion Podcast Network. Please check out the other podcasts on legionpodcasts.com. If you'd like more Hello, This is the Doom Show, go to hellodoomshow.podomatic.com or go to doomedmoviethon.com for the archives. If that's still not enough, go to @doomedmoviethon on Twitter. You can write in to Hello, This is the Doom Show. Use the email doomedmoviethon@gmail.com. Doom Show episodes are available on record and 8-track cassette.
If you enjoyed this show, then make sure you check out the other great shows on the Legion Podcast Network, like Cinema Psyops, Cinema Beef, Devour the Podcast, Duncan and Bo Come Correct, Exploding Heads Horror Movie Podcast, Friday the 13th, Get Slayed, The Hell Ming Power Hour, Hello, This is the Doom Show, Hero Hero Ghost Show, Kill the Cast, Underwater Kaiju from Outer Space, Jerry Hates Action, Legion After Dark, Mental Health, Obsessive Cinema, Discourse, Pick Six Movies, The Podcast by the Cemetery, The Podcast on Haunted Hill, The Psychosemantic Podcast, Rick Radio, House of Wax, Dude Looks Like the 80s, Rabbit and Red Radio, The Shadecast, Short Bus Cinema, Two Drink Minimum Commentaries, The VD Clinic, Who Will Survive Horror Podcast, and Witch vs. the Doomsday Clock. With such a widespread of shows, there is guaranteed to be a niche for you to fall in love with. Horror, politics, movies, books, sex, music, commentaries, health, video games, kaiju, action, news, comedy, and opinions that would most likely get you killed in some parts of the world. We are proud to bring you some of the best podcasting in the world. Check us out at www.legionpodcast.com, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube, and any other dark corner of the internet where podcasts can be found.